Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers.
Hi, my name is Maciej Halasz. I'm a product manager with TimeSys. Today I have a special guest with me, Jeremiah Lott, who is a senior software engineer with TimeSys.
Hello.
Today we would like to cover a topic of how TimeStorm, our Eclipse-based IDE, helps customers throughout the entire development cycle. With that, I would like to start asking you some questions.
Yes, let's go.
Well, today we have, TimeStorm is quite popular amongst our customer base. It works both on Linux and Windows system, right? But the functionality that it provides spans across the entire development cycle that customers go through.
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of Eclipse products, it has a application development aspect to it. You know, writing your C code, debugging, and developing it. But it also has a number of features that are specific to kind of embedded Linux. Root file system building, kernel development, Linux-specific profiling and testing. So it kind of can help you through all the different parts of developing your application and your platform.
So do you see different patterns in how customers are using TimeStorm tools so far? For example, do you see system engineers using TimeStorm different from application engineers?
I would definitely say that we get kind of two big classes of people. There are definitely kind of one class that is just purely interested in application development, and they in general are quite happy with the way that they can edit their code, have it build, have a kind of one-click debug, automatic deployment of their application to their target platform, and I'd say that the most common other aspect is I need to build a customized root file system because there's a pretty nice tool there for doing a dependency analysis and just building your root file system in various formats. So,
does that particular step apply to both groups of users? Because there's clearly a difference in the cycle that they go through, right? Because application developers, in most cases, they don't do any kernel reconfiguration, kernel development, and they try to avoid, I guess, and please correct me if I'm wrong, they try to avoid spending time on customizing the root file system. Their preference is to get whatever they need from a different person on their team, from, let's say, a system engineer that would prep the entire build environment or work environment for them.
I think that probably differs a little, obviously, from mm-hmm. customer to customer, from company to company. Some places the development of your application and the development of your root file system are not considered to be entirely separate. Mm-hmm. But in many places, they do have kind of separate platform team and application teams. But even in that case, there always has to be some push and pull, kind of iterative development throughout it. And I think one of the nicer things about it, too, is that since you have a single tool for it, everyone is kind of seeing the same thing. So if one of your application guys needs to work on the root file system or analyze a problem with it, they have that same tool, and they're able to build the root file systems, even if that's not kind of their primary use or function of the tool. Mm-hmm.
So this is actually a very interesting point that you touched upon, that, TimeStorm, besides being an IDE, is also a mean for collaboration between various teams. Can you talk a bit more about how TimeStorm helps teams collaborate on a project?
Sure. I think probably the two biggest things that it can do is that because it's based on Eclipse, there are numerous plugins to Eclipse for probably the primary one would be for your source control system, right? That you can control that directly from Eclipse, or Eclipse Timestorm. But there are also, any number of other collaborative plugins that would be compatible with the system. I think the other way that it kind of facilitates it was what we kind of already touched on, which is that, it's got a wide enough focus that everyone is kind of there in the same environment, and that can help you collaborate and not have a separate system for different teams and not have the context switch between two different environments be so jarring that you can't really work comfortably in both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So it also allows users that don't have or don't like working with or under Linux to continue using Windows as an operating system, I guess, for development, application development, and share project files with other teammates that have already moved to entirely Linux-based development.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, although a lot of the Timestorm itself is a Java application, mm-hmm. Eclipse is, and so it runs equally well on Windows or Linux. It's based on a series of kind of native tools that are for the most part native Linux tools, but that have been ported to Windows using the Cygwin POSIX emulator. Mm-hmm. And so between those two factors of the user interface running in Java and the underlying tools being ported with the Cygwin emulator, that gives you a pretty close environment between the two to do your development in.
Okay. So let's actually step back for a second and let's talk about the entire development cycle. How Timestorm helps engineers well right from the beginning. So let's talk about Linux kernel first, because I guess that would be a natural starting point for any project, right?
Sure. And Timestorm does have some kind of Linux kernel specific features in it. The first thing that comes to mind is kind of the Linux kernel project. And what we've done there is taken kind of the standard Eclipse support for C, makefiles, all the flexibility. It's a very flexible system, kind of open system. Pre-configures it for standard kernel makefile targets that you might have, unpacks everything in the right location, sets up the environment variables so that it builds for the right architecture so that you can separate output and source code, and just kind of sets up a C project, but then lets you go from there to have whatever type of customizations that you'd like there. One of the really nice things that it adds is an integrated kernel editor. It still lets you use the standard menu config, or if you're on Linux, the Qt-based xconfig, but it also has a user interface that's been written in Java that displays right in the IDE that contains that same information and actually a few enhancements over the basic configuration utilities for searching and getting kind of more interesting debugging information out of it when you're searching for a symbol. So in terms of building and configuring your kernel, that's where it is. And the other area for kernel development that is fairly interesting is that for any kind of GDB-based kernel debugging, Timestorm in general has a GDB integration and specifically has one that's tailored for kernel projects and kernel debugging to kind of provide the client with the server end being a separate something running on the target, whether it be a JTAG device or some kind of software thing like a KGDB patch or something like that.
So both GDB and all the other tools that Timestorm uses for Linux kernel customization and development, they are part of cross-tool chains, correct?
They are, yes. I mean, the GDB that you would be running would generally be part of the cross-tool chain. So in some cases, the JTAG devices themselves come with a custom version of GDB, which has been been built particularly for that JTAG device, and it can also work with those. So its interface is a generic GDB interface, nothing specific to the GDBs that come from a TimeSys distribution, and kind of provides a graphical wrapper around that, and in the case of the kernel debugging, provides a lot of kind of kernel-specific customizations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the most part, you could set it up with the app. You could actually use the application debugging to debug a kernel, but it's kind of counterintuitive because mm-hmm. It has to map a lot of concepts like shared libraries to kernel modules. And it's not always obvious, you know, there's kind of a baseline amount of stuff that has to be set up before it works correctly, and it's right. not always obvious what those steps need to be.
So TimeStorm can manage different types of tool chains, right? TimeSys provides dedicated cross-tool chain or sets of tool chains for different Linux links that we host. But how TimeStorm manages that?
Sure. So TimeStorm contains actually a specific kind of mini tool chain management interface within itself that lists all the paths to tool chains that it knows about. And there are several places in TimeStorm when you need a tool chain where you can kind of just pick it from a drop-down of known tool chains. Mm-hmm. The nice combination that we have there is that if you are using a Linux distribution from TimeSys, you know, one of our reference distributions, and you've installed your tool chain that way, for the most part, it's able to just kind of detect that that's been installed and just add that to the list. If it's a toolchain from another vendor or something that you've kind of installed more directly from RPMs or something from us, then it allows you to manually specify that information. And then once you have them, those two toolchains are really kind of peers or on par with each other. Mm-hmm. It's just the detection that's specific to our distribution. So it's really nice to kind of have that toolchain support. A lot of the basic clips stuff is not really centered around this kind of non-x86 cross environment, and so the tool chains stuff and a lot of the improvements in TimeStorm are adding cross development style mm-hmm. features mm-hmm. as opposed to where your host and target would both be a desktop machine.
This is a very powerful feature, I would think, for customers that work with more than one architecture or more than one platform, yet they develop an application that runs on all of them. With that feature, with that particular feature of TimeStorm, they can simply change the toolchain that they cross-compile the application with and very quickly adopt that application for that different target. And that probably applies also to a Linux kernel, probably not to the extent of supporting device drivers, because there are probably differences in how the kernel is configured and patched for a specific target, but there's still flexibility in which tool chains you have or how you can use them in your development
sure.
in a cycle.
Yeah, I mean, this is jumping around, but on the kernel side, one of the nice features that is in a combination of the 2.6 Linux kernel and the support that's been added in TimeStorm is that now you can keep the output from your kernel separate from the pristine source. So in those situations, you know, if you have a source that can be built for multiple architectures or that has device drivers for multiple boards in it, you can actually set up separate kernel projects that have different tool chains, different kernel configurations, which are all based on a single copy of the source that kind of keep their output in separate projects. So mm-hmm. since we kind of went down that road, I highlight a feature that I particularly like about that system.
Fantastic. So we've talked so far about Linux kernel and what TimeStorm can do, how TimeStorm can help customers developing the Linux kernel, debugging and then changing some of the configuration options. The next step would be root file system design, and we have customers that build small footprint root file systems. We have customers that have specific requirements for a specific format of a root file system, one that can be deployed in Flash or in memory. How TimeStorm supports that part of a development cycle?
Well, yeah, I think one of the kind of the most interesting things that it does is that it has kind of a more complicated dependency analysis than it's kind of easy to get from the command line for the RPMs. It's kind of a common complaint that the dependency web between all of the packages is kind of difficult to unravel, especially when it says something like, I need this particular library. And then, you know, people kind of scratch their heads and say, well, I have no idea what package that library comes from.
Yeah.
And so what's really nice about it is that you can just import kind of all the packages that are available. And then when it does its dependency analysis, it not only searches the packages that you've included and tells you, I'm missing this, but it'll search the packages that you haven't included and tell you, oh, what you really wanted to do was probably include this package or one of these three packages. Mm-hmm. And that kind of really cuts down on the cycle of chasing these things. Kind of one of the nice features too is when you mentioned the small footprint is that, you know, a lot of packages are designed to be kind of complete, but what a lot of people actually need is just a piece of that package, or, you know, they don't care if it's complete as long as it's small. Right, and there are several ways to get that kind of functionality from it, but kind of one of the kind of quick and dirty ways is just to exclude files. So you've got a list of files that are there, and you can just say, "Oh, don't include any of these extra files," or, you know, this has 10 libraries in it, but I'm only going to use this one library, so exclude these other 9. And generally, when you do that, you kind of are throwing dependency analysis then out of the window, because you install them all, it says it's okay, and then you go with RM and you take out all the libraries and, you know, you go to actually run your application and then it says, oh, I needed this library, which you deleted earlier in the process. So again, you get into this kind of long cycle chasing this stuff. So TimeStorm actually has a library dependency that occurs on a per-file basis as well, so it can look at the executables, look at their headers, say what libraries they're declaring that they need, and make sure that other packages have those libraries in them. Usually that's done kind of on a per-package basis when the package is built. But if you start splitting up the individual packages, it'll redo the analysis and make sure that even with the excluded libraries, that this is still a coherent set of libraries and executables that go together.
So does TimeStorm to some extent guarantee that the resulting root file system will work?
Well, you can guarantee that it's going to work from a library perspective. So you're not going to start up a program and have it complain about a missing library, which is one mm-hmm. of the kind of most common problems. There's always, you know, kind of those human dependencies that have been put in that are a little less obvious sometimes, mm-hmm. like, you know, this configuration file was added by this package and is needed by that one, but neither package declared that it needed that file. And there's no amount of kind of computer analysis that can tell you that that I'm going to be opening that text file. But it does kind of cut down on the most common, kind of the most rote analysis that you need to do that can be very time-consuming and kind of cuts the time down on those.
What types of packages or files does the TimeStorm's root file system design tool accept?
Sure. So for the most part, it accepts an RPM-based packaging. The other kind of way that we've been including files in there is that you can just have another project in your Eclipse that just contains files on the file system, and it can also process that as a package and do the same library analysis, the same file-based analysis as it did on an RPM. So that's another way, you know, say usually a particular library is provided by XRPM, but instead you're going to build your own version of that, but you don't want to go the full path of redoing a spec file, making a brand new RPM mm-hmm. for it. You can rebuild it locally, put it in a project, either the project that builds it, or someone could just send you the binary, you could throw it into an empty project, and then create a mapping that says, you know, treat this project as if it were a package, and do that analysis across the... So those are kind of the primary inputs to TimeStorm at the moment.
So from your description, it sounds like there are two usage patterns, really. One is, again, for system engineers who design the root file system for application developers, and then application developers who want to deploy their application in the root file system.
Yeah, and at that point, you can you know, if you've been developing your application and your application is linking against libraries that might not end up in the platform, you can actually add your application as a package through this project mechanism, and then it can suggest the other packages that haven't been included in the platform, which can then be either input to the platform team, mm-hmm. or if you don't have separate teams, mm-hmm. you can adjust your root file system at that point.
Yeah.
So
I've worked personally with a number of larger customers of ours and had some experience with how people design root file system. I heard from our customers that TimeStorm saves a lot of time, at least in this particular area, in the root file system definition and compilation. And what is your take on that? I mean, do you think that how helpful that part of TimeStorm is?
I actually think that this is one of the kind of key areas where it's adding value to what people are doing. It's a very specific kind of job that needs to be done, mm-hmm. and there aren't actually a lot of tools out there that are doing that for Linux-based systems. So from my perspective, that's something that's really kind of cool or good about this part of TimeStorm.
Especially embedded systems, I guess, because that's where you have very, very strict constraints.
Sure. Yes. So there are lots of systems out there that are package managers for your desktop machine where, you know, it will do some basic analysis. You can just say, I want to install, I want to install this graphical package on my, OpenOffice or something on my desktop, mm-hmm. and it'll figure out what libraries and everything you need, right? But at the same time, the usage pattern that they have versus the usage pattern of an embedded system where, one, you're going to be splitting these packages up and maybe not installing an entire package, and just the fact that for the most part, those don't work very well in kind of this cross environment where right. you've got a powerful PC and it's doing all the actual processing, but the root file system is just a subdirectory. There's a lot of these tools don't really work very well. You know, even though they could do the analysis part, they can't actually build a root file system in that way.
Right. Ready for deployment to some
right.
extent.
Right. And I think the other thing, obviously, that it adds, which you touched on a little bit, is not just what the inputs to it are and how the analysis is, but that then it has some direct outputs that are kind of more useful in an embedded system. You know, the fact that it can essentially build a root file system image as a single file that's, you know, formatted JFFS2 or CRAMFS, EXT2 for like a RAM disk and an old style NRD. And I think one of the nice things about it too is that usually you'd have to kind of be root, use a loopback device to do a lot of this stuff, or there are some specialized tools out there for each one of these file systems that kind of accept different inputs for how to do the things that are root, create device nodes, change the ownership of files to root, you know, make your SUID root mm-hmm. mount.
Mm-hmm.
TimeStorm kind of provides the interface that kind of a standard interface to all of those various tools, at least the ones that it supports. User space tools that are kind of purely user stuff, so you don't necessarily have to be root all the time when you're doing your root file system development, and you don't have to worry about your root file system that's supposed to be on your embedded board infecting your host system by mistake, since you're running as root and suddenly you've got ARM binaries all through lib and nothing's running. And yeah, that has happened to many people.
Happened to me as well in the past. So we've spent some time now talking about root file system and Linux kernel development. Application development, I guess, is to some extent similar to the kernel level development, but there are some subtle differences, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of two standard modes for doing C application that is there, and I think the one is very similar to the kernel development, which is you've got kind of a package. It's already got a makefile. A developer is sitting down and written a complex makefile with dependency analysis between C files in this case. And all you really need to do is call make, right? Mm-hmm. And then you need you need a graphical environment for editing, make files, see files, but you're going to manage kind of all the complexity yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And in many cases, this job has already been done for an application. So in that particular case, it's very similar to the kernel system, which is essentially has the same kind of system in place. The other way that it works for application development is essentially a makefile generation system, where you just create the C files and say you want to combine all these C files into an executable. And it takes care of, you know, header dependencies and which order things should be built in, and then eventually linking them all into an executable or a library, and essentially generates a makefile for you. So you just pick the toolchain, you create your C code, say what kind of output you want, and it generates a makefile that does that by, you know, reading the C files with GCC and putting out dependency
and
information.
The generated makefiles, they can be just taken with the C files with a project for, like, I'm thinking right now about engineers that don't use IDE and how they collaborate with engineers that use TimeStorm.
Sure.
In the light of the generated makefiles, whether that can be just simply taken from the TimeStorm project and executed from the command line.
Yeah, it definitely can be. I mean, it just generates a standard GNU make file as its output. So TimeStorm has a piece in it that analyzes the C files structure and puts out this make file. But once that happens, all it needs to do to actually build the project is call make. So you can transfer that make file to centralized systems that don't need to have, you know, the full IDE on them to regenerate it. You just need a standard Linux system or Cygwin system to, mm-hmm. to do that make. And it also allows people, you know, you can tar up your project and send it to someone who doesn't have TimeStorm installed and just tell them, yeah, to build it, yeah, just run make here, or, you know, right, follow the instructions in this README. It doesn't have to be, you know, every single person has to use this, yeah, graphical environment in order to build that.
And a lot of large companies, at least, they use the source code versioning control subsystem of some sort, and that allows people within the company to share access to the same source code, and they have different requirements in front of them. They use different processes. So having that flexibility of one team being able to generate the entire project and then share that with another team within the same organization through source code versioning control system, code that can be recompiled, rebuilt with TimeStorm or without, I would think is a very powerful feature.
Yeah.
So we talked. Let's move on to the next stage in a development cycle, which is the verifying the quality of overall solution. Can you talk a bit about how TimeStorm helps out in that area?
Yeah, the biggest kind of testing feature that TimeStorm has would be its ability to run tests the LTP and kind of POSIX compliance tests that TimeSys uses to verify their Linux distributions on a distribution that is created by a customer, or to re-verify changes that have been made to a distribution. And it has the same kind of, you know, set up where your target is, boot it up, and then just, you know, use SSH or Telnet FTP in order to automatically build, transfer these tests, run them, and then provide a graphical result, you know, charts and kind of numerical analysis, mm-hmm. of what the result of the test is.
So what is the level of required human interaction with those tests when you use them through the TimeStorm system?
So there are some tests that we have kind of that come from the LTP suite that are essentially just text files with instructions in them, but it allows you to tell it, okay, stop on those tests and I'll follow the instructions and enter a result, so that you can kind of get a unified result for your manual and your automatic tests if you want to. But there's also kind of an easy way to just say only run the ones that don't take any you know, user interaction, and for those ones, you just click the button and let it go. You know, don't power cycle, yeah, your target, and you should be okay.
So percentage-wise, how many of those tests are automated, or and how many of them require human interaction?
It's a pretty small number that have the human interaction. I'm going to say it's probably, you know, only 8, maybe 10 out of 7 or 800 in the LTP, and then the other test suites don't have any manual tests in there, several hundred tests each. So.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's a nice feature again, mm-hmm. because if you're a developer that has to verify the quality of the overall solution, and you would most likely spend, I would think few days at least of your work time trying to execute those tests by hand or managing the execution cycle. And with TimeStorm, it sounds like that part is already taken care of as TimeStorm has this automation built in. Well, I'm looking here at a person that is managing our time, and he's already waving hands that we're towards the end of our time here today. We have covered a lot of topics today. We haven't gone through entire development cycle. There's another area where TimeStorm can help, which is probably profiling.
Profiling, and we only kind of touched on debugging.
And we just touched on debugging.
Yeah.
So perhaps that will be an opportunity for us to meet again and use a bit more of your time, Jeremiah. So, but today, thank you very much for your time and for the insight that you provided on our tools. If our listeners, if you have any questions for Jeremiah or any of us here at TimeSys, please do not hesitate to contact us. You can send us email at podcast@timesys.com, and please visit our website, timesys.com, and lldn.timesys.com for more information on upcoming podcasts. Thank you very much again.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Check out our new site to get free code, discuss, and learn about embedded Linux development. Go to timesys.com today.